Hello and welcome to another episode of eDiscovery Chicks, the podcast about all things eDiscovery and legal tech, hosted by two gals who might skip dinner so long as they got a really big breakfast. Anyways, we're your hosts. That's Bree.
And that's Angie. And today we're talking about mobile device data. This is the one that always gets everybody's attention. Like, what are you doing with my phone? What do you mean?
I know.
So I'm sure this will be an interesting conversation. But before we get to that, what's this you're saying about skipping meals? Yeah, I'm a chubby girl.
So I've been solo parenting a lot, which means that like I only have to feed myself and a toddler. And I've realized how hard I revert to single girl Angie eating habits when I don't have to provide for another adult. Mostly that is, instead of eating dinner, I just snack on weird stuff for like an hour, right? Well, as opposed to making a meal. I'm like, yeah, I'll put this on a cracker. Put that on a cracker. Like, whatever.
Well, when my son was that age, I would also find myself eating toddler food.
Oh, yeah. A lot of chicken nuggets down this gullet.
I was like, why am I eating veggie tots right now? This is weird. But yeah, I know. I'm totally with you. And speaking of food, by the way, so are you into this whole pumpkin spice, pumpkin everything that's going on? Like, it's pumpkin everything explosion all over every social media that I'm on.
Yes. Yes, yes. So not only that, but one of my favorite fall activities is, this is girl math for sure, but I'm like, if I go to the store and I buy one pumpkin every time I go to the grocery store, it's less expensive than if I just bought 12 pumpkins up front. I don't know, whatever. I'm not looking for feedback on that math, by the way.
I'm not weighing in.
So once it's like mid-September, I just start accumulating pumpkins and it's like this 2-month-long process.
Are you using them for food purposes? Are you using them for decorative purposes?
Decor.
Okay. Who really eats like a whole big ass pumpkin? Like, those things are hard to break down.
I did this once actually. Last time I carved a pumpkin, won't be doing it again. It's like 5 years ago. But you can attach a pumpkin carving thing to a power drill and carve it out that way so you don't have to do it manually.
It's me. Well, that's very smart.
So pro tip for all of those who celebrate pumpkin season, which it
I'm
is.
I have to think about that. I might relive some of my pumpkin carving days this Halloween. I never thought about that.
Well, as much as I would love to talk about pumpkins all day, I guess we should probably move this along. Because like Bree said, today we are talking about mobile device data. So mobile devices are really integral to our personal and professional lives. I always feel really sort of like stuck up or boomerish when I call them mobile devices. Anyways, and these devices.
Boomers is like cellular devices. Is that the right boomer term?
Maybe I feel like I'm just trying to help being like a wannabe Brit. You know, it's my mobile.
My mobile. Okay.
Anyways, these mobile devices are, turns out, a gold mine of data. And so here's what we're going to do today. We're going to talk about the impact of these types of devices on e-discovery. We're going to talk about the challenges of collecting data off of them, how those challenges interact with things like BYOD, bring your own device policies, and e-discovery in general. And then we're going to have a section where we have some hot takes on the future.
I mean, this topic is becoming more and more important every day, of course, because we're all conducting business on our mobile devices. It doesn't matter who you are or what business you're in. You've had some mixing and mingling of your personal and business life on a mobile device. And it's so funny. I happened to be at a baby shower out of all places this weekend. That's one of these co-ed baby showers. And the guys were like laughing about how they use their business phones for personal. And I'm like, that is such a bad idea. Do not do that. At all.
You stupid idiots.
But I mean, of course, I pick on the guys, but I know there's girls that do the same thing. But
oh, yeah.
Yes. They were having a conversation. They're like, no, this doesn't really happen. Our company's not sophisticated enough to get any data off this. I'm like, yes, they are, bro. And you know what? If your company can't do it, they're going to hire somebody that can. So you should probably not do that.
Do you know what they call that? They call that fuck around and find out.
Yeah, exactly. We have to get the bar chart out. How much do you exactly. find out? Or no, it's a line graph. Sorry, not a bar chart.
Yeah.
Total nerd. Okay. Any kind of internal investigation that you are a part of, a mobile device is likely going to be included, even if you just happen to be an innocent bystander. Because you know what? If you're not crazy, somebody around you that got you involved in this is crazy. And they probably text you something that may be relevant relevant, or even if they didn't, your legal counsel is going to want to prove that they did not. So your phone will still be involved. So don't think that you are too far away from any certain issue to have your device also involved in some scandal. But that's one of the reasons why this is important. It freaks everybody out. But they really do raise some legal and ethical challenges for especially corporate law departments and businesses, because there is that mixture of personal data, which is there, of course, there's privacy laws that protects you somewhat. But you did agree whenever you did start working there that either you're using their device or you're using your own, you're bringing your own device. And you made some agreements on paper about what your company has access to. So that can get really hairy depending on the bring your own device policy and the privacy laws. But more about that here in a moment. In addition to the challenges that they raise, there's also technical challenges. And we'll talk about those, like the passwords, the PIN codes, the iCloud access, the wiping apps, the people that are in trouble and accidentally dropped their phone in the ocean. All the things people
allegedly accidentally.
Let's dig into it, shall we?
Let's talk about the types of mobile device data that are pretty common to litigation and then the challenges of collecting them. And I'm going to start us off with the big one, which is text messages. Mm-hmm. I'm also going to throw in some instant messaging apps in there. So by instant messaging apps, I mean things like WhatsApp, Signal, Slack, that kind of thing, Teams, Discord, what have you. And the challenge of collecting these types of communications and texts is that they can be ephemeral. I mean, how many people do you know that have their texts set to auto-delete after 30 days or something like that? How many people keep their WhatsApp or Signal messages forever? Very few. And so that's kind of why we call them ephemeral. And they can also be encrypted. You know, Signal, WhatsApp, those are end-to-end encrypted messages. So you're going to have to break that encryption in order to get at them. And so there are a couple of things that kind of come to mind here for me. If you're dealing with this type of data, you got to act quickly, number one, because who knows if someone has their text set to delete every 7 days or something like that. So you got to act as soon as you know about it. And then number two, you're probably going to have to use a specialized tool to collect this type of data. A lot of people, if you're on the corporate side and you're trying to collect from like a Google or a Microsoft, there might be a built-in tool, or you might already have e-discovery software. But odds are, whatever you're using for your other data sources isn't going to work for this. So you're going to have to buy some sort of specialized tool, and that can be quite costly.
And another problem can be not what you're doing on your device, but the fact that there's a lot of different types of files that can be downloaded from your device. Some of those being things like photos and videos and audio files, like the voicemail messages or other images that you're downloading. Those can be quite concerning because, number one, a lot of times they're not searchable. So if you're dumping them into your review software, you might not be able to say like, hey, murder, gun, blood. Like, you're not going to be able to search for those things.
Show me murder.
Exactly. You have to process that data in a way that normalizes it and makes it searchable. We'll talk about that here more in a moment. Also, the other type of data, or not just the other, but another type of data that you can get off of a phone can be in the form of logs, like call logs, activity logs, access logs of where somebody was or what applications they accessed. Think about the large amount of data that you can find associated with someone's phone. Not only is there a lot of data there, but there's a lot of data that's totally non-responsive. Like my son's football game likely has nothing to do with the investigation at work, right? So large amounts of data in various formats and also normalizing the data. So we'll talk more about that here in a moment.
But I want to hit on another fun one, which is GPS and location data. So mobile devices, that's like your phone, it could be your watch, you know, whatever. They are constantly tracking and storing location data. You know, every time you get a push notification on your phone, it's like such and such app has been using your location in the background. Do you want to allow this to continue? And most of the time I'm like, sure, whatever, I don't care. Think about the number of times that's happened to you. There is so much location data on your phone, and it's often happening in the background without your awareness. That can be things like your GPS coordinates, your Wi-Fi network connections, cell tower triangulation. Basically, there's a wealth of location data on your mobile device. That is not to say it's easy to get to necessarily or easy to interpret, because the granularity and accuracy of that data can really vary depending on the device and on its settings. It can depend on the availability of these other sources like cell phone towers or a Wi-Fi network. You know, it can be dependent on these external factors as well. And then also there's just the sheer volume and size of this data can be really daunting. I mean, think about everywhere you've gone in the last week. Every place you've moved, your phone is pinging off of different towers. And so that data is out there somewhere. And now multiply that by like a longer time span, and you can kind of begin to grasp the volume of data we're talking about. And then like these other data sources that we've already chatted about, you're probably going to need to use special tools. This isn't stuff that just like, you know, you can go in and get off of your phone. Someone's got to extract it, and then they've got to interpret it, because it looks like all of these location data logs kind of look like gobbledygook in their raw form. And so you have to have somebody who can read gobbledygook.
Somebody who can read gobbledygook is really one of the most key like assets you could have. I wonder what that looks like in a resume. I'm a gobbledygook reader.
Fluent in gobbledygook.
Yeah. Well, and some other things to consider, and we kind of briefly mentioned this earlier. What about all those apps that you have on your phone? And if you're like my son, you're downloading an app per second every day is what it feels like, because he kind of has to get my parental permission.
I was going to ask, do you have parental controls? And are you like, Miles, stop it?
No, I'm like, dear God, how many of these do you have to have? Anyhow, there's these apps. And so what they bring into the equation are, of course, they, you know, add on to the things that we've already said, a ton of data in weird formats that you don't know how to ingest, because some of these apps weren't designed with eDiscovery in mind, believe that or not. And, you know,
wait, the world doesn't revolve around eDiscovery?
It's really weird. It really should.
Oh, that's so weird. But it blows my mind every time.
I know. That's a damn shame. In some of these applications, they may be in other countries. There may be like privacy issues involved. There may be special things that you have to do, like through subpoenas or court orders or other types of permission that you might need to get that data from that application. Those applications don't always save data. How long did it go back? By the time that investigation or whatever it is that you're working on that you need this information falls into your lap, that data may very well be gone. Also, another thing to consider about these applications are the same thing that Angie just mentioned about having somebody who can analyze gobbledygook. You might need a forensics person or somebody with some expertise in order to make sense of what this jumbled up data is coming from an app and analyze it so that it makes sense with the rest of your investigation. There's a lot of considerations here for those different apps, and some of them are so unique and weird that it's literally the first time anybody's ever thought about extracting data from them. So it kind of feels like you're in the Stone Ages when you come across one of those guys. But, you know, we're talking about a lot of the issues that we can have with mobile device data in general. And I think it's really important to compare what makes mobile device data stand out and what makes it different than our traditional data sources.
Oh, that is a great thing to talk about. Also, I'm sorry, I've been petting my cat and I think some of his hair got in my mouth. And so I think I understand what it's like to have a hairball right now. And I'm just trying to power through. So must go on.
Okay.
Anyways. So traditional data versus these more modern data sources. So I feel like one of the biggest differences to my mind is just the volume and the variety of data. Like traditional data, you know, it's going to be kind of a uniform structure. You kind of know what you're in for when you collect it. And it's usually stored in some sort of centralized location, whether that be on-prem or in the cloud. It's usually there's a central hub of info. Mobile data, on the other hand, this can be varied and dispersed. So the data, I mean, think about how many apps you have on your phone. Each one of those apps is going to store data in a slightly different way. Some of it may be on your phone. Some of it may be with the app provider. Every app on your phone is its own special little snowflake. Each one of them is going to be its own special little challenge when you go to collect it.
Yeah. And when we talk about the kind of data that is found in both traditional data sources and on mobile devices, there's differences in terms of, you know, the static and enduring qualities like Angie was just referring to. when we have traditional data sources, a lot of times those are well known, like O365 or Boxtuck or Google or whatever, or file share, network shares. Those places are places we're used to getting data from and may even be places that we can preserve data in place before we ever collect data. Because a lot of times mobile devices get collected in order to be preserved and nothing ever happens with them. With traditional data sources, you've got the constant reliability, they're frequently hit data sources, you can preserve them in place, they're easy to collect from, and they also retain their metadata, most likely the author names, the last modified dates, the file type. Is just super helpful to help you cull through and review that data. So that's your traditional data sources. Mobile data, on the other hand, is often ephemeral. So get all those apps that you're loading, and at the same time, you have to delete apps because you're done with that one. That one's old and boring. Or maybe you're done with that one because that's where you had all your crazy conversations about the murder that you took place in.
Bri, I want you to create all hypotheticals in my life going forward.
I'm getting gruesome today. I keep talking about murders, and I was also listening to Metallica today. Like, I think I might be angry inside somewhere. I was jamming out to Enter Sandman. When does that happen?
Oh, yes. I was listening to like a true crime murder podcast this morning. So fun. So it's a very murdery Monday, I think.
Oh. Yeah. So going back to mobile devices, that's part of the issue, the fleeting nature of not only the data, but even the applications that are on that phone. And what about the people that really do things on their phone, like their Murder Mondays? Like, I was into Taco Tuesdays, and now we're having Murder Mondays. Like, it's getting really intense up in here. But those who partake in Murder Mondays, they probably do want to purge their data all the time to cover the tracks. Those are a couple of differences there between your traditional data sources and your mobile data source. But I know the attorney on the line wants to speak about legal defensibility.
Pick me. I do want to talk about legal defensibility. So when you are trying to get evidence admitted in a court of law, it has to be admissible. And that's a term of art, and it requires several different types of burdens of proof. Part of that is that showing the court that the way that you collected and preserved this data didn't do anything to mess with its authenticity. And so with traditional data, the process for collecting, preserving, and admitting evidence is pretty well established. There's case law on most of these data sources in every jurisdiction, or your local rules might address it. But with mobile data, this type of data is new and it's rapidly evolving. So courts are still developing those standards of admissibility. What that means as a practical matter for legal teams trying to do this here and now without a good roadmap is that you got to be really meticulous about documenting your collection process and be prepared to educate the parties in court. That might be the court itself. It might be your opposing counsel. But you got to know what you did and know why it works, because you might be in a place where you got to educate other people. And then one last thing I want to flag just before we move on is that there might be some privacy or security concerns here that don't really exist for traditional data sources. Traditional data, you know, there's pretty well established legal and regulatory frameworks, but mobile data, you're going to run into the same sort of problem. There's kind of mixed use, they're newer sources, and so it's just not as clear cut as some of that older stuff. So, okay, let's talk a little bit more detail about the challenges of collecting mobile device data. I don't know, Bri, what do you think are some of the biggest challenges, like from a technical standpoint?
So we've already talked about some of the challenges already in this episode, but I feel like we're at the stage where you could start one of those flowcharts. Is that what the fancy word is? But I'm talking about just considerations of next steps. Like, what do we do from here? Say you're investigating a phone. You're looking at the phone. Number one, is the phone in good working order and it's undamaged? Yes or no? If yes, then move on to the next step, which would be, do you have the PIN code to said phone? Yes or no? If no, seek help from a forensic advisor or your company, CISO, or his security team, or his or her security team, so you can crack into that phone. If yes, carry on to the next step. Do you have your employees' permission and their cooperation, or the person's permission and cooperation? If yes, That's going to be really easy because you're either going to get assistance from them to download their data, or you're going to have some sort of expert. Like, we have some wonderful companies out there today that will be able to extract your data with the cooperation of your custodian or your employee or whomever's data it is with no problem. You could also have a forensic expert take that device and image the whole dang thing. And it's a lot easier when you have somebody's cooperation. But if no, then what do we do? So then we are going to do things like, do we need a subpoena? Do we need a court order? Who has this phone? Does the company have this phone? Does the person have this phone? Is this phone a personal device? Is this a phone a company device? You see, there's like a many layered onion approach to what do we do with this? And then you've got questions of, is it an Android? Is it an Apple? Androids are going to be a little bit harder to get in if somebody has, well, I can't even say that one's harder than the other. They have special challenges. But if somebody's attempted to keep you from their device, it's going to be harder to get in it one way or the other. If it's an Apple, you might have things like, oh, there's an iCloud account that's going to have a whole lot of other information in it. Mm-hmm. Is it appropriate for the company to be looking through all that information? Can you access that location? So lots of different things to consider when you're talking about technical challenges with phones. As a result, you're going to likely need a wide variety of tools if you're doing this yourself. If you're not doing it yourself, you're going to want to have a lot of different tools in your toolbox of people you can call for fill in the blank example. And I would suggest, I mean, this sounds silly, but I would suggest working through some of these workflows in your head. I work at a company, we have a BYOD policy, and we also have people that have mobile devices that are owned by the company. Okay, what happens when I get one of each? And then what's my workflow? And who do I call? Because the worst thing is to have to create that on the fly. That is a terrible idea. Because on the fly, you're like, what the heck is this? Well, I don't even know what we can do. Well, I mean, is there people that work here that can do this kind of thing? Well, I don't even know a vendor. Like, what's a vendor? Well, who knows a vendor? Well, maybe my counsel is going to know. And how much is this going to cost? And now I got to cost compare vendor. Like, nobody wants to do that on the fly. Like, have that route already planned ahead. That is my tip for you. Data encryption is a huge one. And that one, you may need very specialized vendors, but you may even need to have a vendor that works with your data security team. Sometimes it's like everybody has to put their noodles together to come up with the recipe for for getting into that phone. Then we think about other technical challenges as it relates to e-discovery. Did we get a proper chain of custody? Which that is a huge one, guys. Do not forget the chain of custody. Do not forget to write down everything about where it was and the condition that you find it in, including the PIN code if you can. How much data are we getting off of this device and how do we handle it? And how do we review this data in conjunction with everything else that we're reviewing for this investigation? How do we prove up the authenticity? Was this data something that the employee said, hey, I'll help you with this. I'm going to move it to my network share and then I'm going to move it to another folder and then I'm going to put it in your drive. And then every time they moved it, they changed the last modified date and they changed all the dates and times for all of the different messages. That is absolutely useless. That is not the kind of data collection that you want to be involved with. And then you have, of course, we've mentioned this several times throughout today, but you've got data loss. And this is something as you're thinking through your work plan, your workflow, that you want to consider. What is your legal responsibility? What happens if you have a legal hold and somebody has been notified that they are involved in a legal hold and they don't realize their phone is part of the legal hold and they just decide like, oh, snap, I think there's some sort of Murder Monday issue going down. I know all about that. I have it on my personal phone. Well, they can't tell me to save that. So, shink, I'm just going to delete it all. And then they don't find out till, 3-4 weeks later when they have an interview with the legal department that they were supposed to have actually preserved that data because it wasn't clearly explained to them in the legal hold notice. Those are some of the challenges that we can have. And I've touched a bit on admissibility, but I know Angie's dying to get a little bit deeper there.
Oh, I love to talk admissibility. Kind of flagged this earlier, but mobile data will often be challenged in court and particularly about authenticity and method of collection. So authenticity is just like the evidence is what it purports to be. For example, mobile device data. Some jurisdictions, some courts, will allow you to just like take a screenshot of the texts and send that in. And for whatever reason, courts in that jurisdiction have said that's sufficient. Other jurisdictions, on the other hand, might require a higher burden of proof. For example, having someone actually come in and use a third-party software to extract the data from the phone and then re-render those text messages through that software. So there are a number of different ways of getting at this data, and it's going to be highly dependent on your court, what your court has said, and probably, honestly, the technological prowess of your judge. Point being, though, the courts are going to scrutinize pretty intensely whether data was collected in a legally sound manner. And so if you've got one of those, if you're in one of those jurisdictions where there's this higher burden of proof of admissibility for these novel data sources, you're really going to want to focus on that. You're going to want to maintain a solid chain of custody, and you might even need to get an expert to come in and talk about it.
Speaking of experts, forensic experts are huge in mobile data. A couple things to be considerate of as you move forward with thinking about forensics and mobile devices. Number one, there are tools out there on the market today where you can purchase the tool and you yourself can extract data forensically from mobile devices. When you do that, you need to make sure that, number one, you have a tool that will forensically protect your data as it is being extracted in the admissible way that Angie was just referring to. Meaning, you want to have a chain of custody. You want to make sure that all of your data is secure in some sort of container file or the like, so that it can't be moved around, it can't be manipulated in any way, and you have preserved all the auditing trail on the back end. So you can easily go prove up in a court of law if you need to, yes, Your Honor, this is the device that we speak of, and this is how the extraction was done. If you feel uncomfortable doing that yourself as a company, then stop. Go get an expert, because it ain't worth it. I'm telling you right now, it is not worth it. You might as well get an expert who does this every day, who can say without a shadow of a doubt, and they can say on a witness stand, this is the data that we speak of, Your Honor, and this is how it was forensically and safely collected. The other thing is, consider what you actually need from a device. Do you actually need a full forensic image from a device? Meaning, I need to know all the times that the phone was turned off and on, and maybe where it was, and was it at Starbucks, and was it at McDonald's, and was it at the house, and was it at work? Do we need to know all that information? Do we need to know all the temp files and all the other system updates and things of that nature? Is that important to us? Or are we simply just trying to figure out if there was any text messages about pumpkins or hairballs or Murder Mondays? So maybe that's what all that there is. And that can completely change the method in which you decide to collect your data. The other thing is going to your forensics expert. Make sure you're working with somebody who is happy to also allow you to have some analytics performed on your data. Nothing is worse than going to a forensic vendor and saying, hey, I need to image this phone because we're having this huge investigation and I need to know if Sally texted Bob and if they actually did something wrong. And so the vendor says, sure, here is just random log files with some report that has very highly technical forensic speak on it that you don't understand, and reports that you can't dump into your review platform. And there's messages that are in a format that you can't even understand exactly what they're saying. That is absolutely not helpful when you're trying to, you know, review data as part of a large litigation. So you want to work with a vendor who is used to e-discovery and investigations and e-discovery tools. We want to make sure we're working with somebody who can not only give us the report, that can also sit down and say, hey, look, this is overall what I'm seeing. Or if you're trying to find this type of data, this is where you're going to really dig for it and how you're going to dig for it and how it will make sense to your attorneys or whoever you're trying to explain it to, the judge. This is one of those, if you can be the interpreter of gobbledygook for everyone, it's a very valuable skill set. And I do not say that in joke. I mean, the term itself is joking, but really the idea of it is not joking at all, because that person is the most valuable person on the team. And when you are that person, if you're the forensics expert or if you're the e-discovery person or whoever, whatever your role is, if you're the gobbledygooker,
gobbledygooker,
you're doing a great service for your team. The other thing that's nice about working with a forensic expert is that they will hold onto that data so that it's nice, safe, and sound. It's not somewhere on your network or in your tool only. So that if one of your people on your team, I won't name names, goes into that data source and they completely jack it up, you're like, oh, well, that was our only copy of that data. So now that's not admissible. All right. Enough about forensics. I love forensics. It's super interesting. And that is where all the Murder Mondays situations are found. But something that we talked about earlier today, I have a very strong belief in having a great BYOD policy in TACT.
Tell me more, Brie.
I know I'm speaking your love language now.
But
having a BYOD, bring your own device policy that's comprehensive and that people understand and they remember getting is super important. Do you want to talk about that, Angie?
Yeah, sure. There are a couple of reasons that having a strong, a robust BYOD policy is going to really serve you well. One is that this whole BYOD phenomenon, especially post-COVID, has really blurred the lines between personal and professional data. You need a clear policy for how you're dealing with that. And then it also complicates data collection in some ways because, like Brie said earlier, you know, we really only want to target the relevant work-related data. And so photos of like her son's football practice on the weekend or like what funny thing my cat did yesterday, you know, those probably aren't going to be relevant to business-related litigation. We want to make sure that we're navigating those privacy waters with some adeptness. And you can often spell that out in your BYOD policy. I will also say, like, custodians, when you tell someone, and I get this, like, I would feel this way, but custodians, sometimes if you ask them for their personal phone, there's an ick factor to that, right? Like, I don't want to give my work my personal phone because it's got all my personal stuff on it. And so you want to be able to navigate that interpersonal relationship with some sensitivity to those concerns too. There are ways to mitigate this, all of these. One that is one of my personal faves is an MDM software solution or a mobile device management software solution, which is where your employer will put a software program on your phone, like an app or whatever, and it will allow them to access certain parts of your phone. Each MDM is different and it'll depend on the settings that your organization has decided to implement. But basically what it does is it limits the window. This is going to be a really weird metaphor. We're closing the drapes on the window of your phone so that your IT department, whoever is collecting it, can only see a small picture. They can't see everything that's on your phone. So I don't know, Brie, do you have any other kind of mitigation strategies?
Yeah, I mean, this is going to kind of summarize a couple of things that were already briefly mentioned earlier. But like Angie was just talking about the bring your own device policy, have a strong, clear bring your own device policy. And I would recommend not only having that as part of your onboarding procedure for your employees, but clearly post it somewhere or multiple places. In fact, I really love having some sort of compliance portal or legal hold dashboard that's available for your employees where they can go and see all their legal holds, but also see things like, what is my bring my own device policy? Where is my legal hold training? Like, all that is super important because that is actually going to take some of the drama out when you go and try to collect that from the employee. Like, bro, it's not just me. It's like an actual rule here. Okay. I didn't come up with the policies. I'm just trying to follow them.
So we love to be able to blame the man.
Of course. Or
we need a scapegoat. We need a good scapegoat. Yeah.
And so I also just kind of open the door for the next thing I was going to mention, which is have a clear legal hold notice. Make sure when you are issuing your legal hold notices that you clearly state in a way that people understand your phone data cannot be purged. Don't get crazy and try to cover your tracks. Like, we're watching you. Make sure you make that clear in that notification. That way you're covering yourself in the instance that somebody actually did participate in Murder Monday and tries to delete their messages. Have an action plan. I talked about this a little bit earlier. You know, think ahead. What's going to happen if? And think about in that action plan, you're going to want to spell out some things already. Who are my vendors that I can call on? And in what circumstances would I call on those vendors? What tools can I use? And in what circumstances would I use those tools? What could I actually get off of one of our company devices? What could I be expected to get off of an Android or an Apple device? What's even possible for me? What's legal for me? Sit down and talk to data security. Sit down and talk to your attorneys. Talk to your e-discovery. Whoever, wherever you are in the world of these roles, talk to everybody else. Get on the same page about it. And it would be even better if you come up with a written action plan. Woof, that would be amazing. But wow, yeah, that's very proactive. So how
that's very oldest daughter of you.
Oh my God. You know, I have action plans. They're coming out of my ears. And your action plans are probably getting revised every time you use them. If you're like me, oh, we're not doing that again.
New goal. Absolutely. Got to change the color coding on this.
That's right. It will. Every time that somebody makes a sucker out of you, you're like, oh, you can fool me once, but you can't
not again. Twice. Never again.
So have your toolbox ready to go if you want to have applications in-house. And that may, and maybe you do, and that's fine. But understand who needs to be performing that workflow, how you can make sure that it's very secure, what your limitations are in-house with that those applications. Know what you're able to do and what you cannot do. For example, if you have e-discovery, you know, technicians or IT professionals who are helping you collect data off of a phone, make sure they understand, legally speaking, this is where you can tread and this is where you cannot. And maybe you can go to these other places, but you need to have permission first. So just make sure everybody's on the same playing field. The other thing is, as you're putting together these plans, people that often get left out are the people who are actually either onboarding employees and giving them their devices in the first place. Maybe there's certain things that you want to lock down so they can't do it and they should be locked down from the get-go. Like, that would be amazing. Or people that are in charge of change management. Angie needs a new phone, so I'm going to change out her old phone. What do we do then? Making sure that we don't wipe Angie's old phone, making sure that Angie's new phone has all the same security protocols that we intend for her to have. And the person that handles the terminated employees' devices, when HR gets involved, which it might be an HR person, or when IT help desk person gets involved, which could be them, needs to know, bro, you cannot just throw that in the trash or send it back to Verizon. You want to have already a plan in process for that. So that's the mitigation strategies I can think of. And I'm sure there are smarter people out there than me that have many more tips. And you know what, guys? If you ever listen to our podcast and you're like, dude, you forgot like 10 things that are so important, comment on our LinkedIn page.
Please do. You know,
or email us. I would love to have a conversation about these things. But what are some emerging trends and innovations?
Ooh, I love this question. I really think that biometric data and wearables are going to be a big deal going forward. And we've already seen this in some of the cases. Like, I think we've talked about the Fitbit murder, and there have been like some other wearable devices that have produced some really critical data in some pretty high stakes lawsuits. So I feel like that's going to be kind of a big thing, especially because more and more people seem to be adopting this technology. You know, think about everyone you know who has a smartwatch, an Aura ring, a Fitbit, a Whoop, which I learned what those are recently. There it is. I mean, all of these devices are taking biometric data of and about you. And so I feel like those are going to come into play more and more. Sometimes I wonder if it's going to be like a built-in lie detector, you know, if we're going to stop using polygraphs and start using people's wearable devices.
Oh my gosh.
Anyways. Isn't it scary? But then I also thought there's probably some privacy concerns with your biometric data too. Like pacemakers, think all these like smart devices that we have in and around our bodies. I feel like that's just going to be a really fun legal landscape.
Depending on who you are.
Because I'm a freak and I think those things are really fun.
No, they're super interesting, but I would hate to be the one that's being analyzed.
I get shamed by my devices sometimes. Sometimes it's like, girl, get your life in order.
When are you ever going to sleep? Well, I think in terms of emerging trends and innovations, I can already tell within the e-discovery industry that there is a impatience that is getting stronger and stronger with the fact that it's so damn hard to get data off of devices sometimes. And it's also an area where now e-discovery and forensic people have, you know, all these blurred lines, and forensic folks are also impatient with this. Why is it so hard to get data from a damn iPhone? If we're going to use an iPhone to do all half of our work, we need to get at it, just like we would a PC, and this is ridiculous. So I think that there's a major impatience there, which is making technology, like software companies, step up their game big time. In two different ways. One, in terms of the accessibility, especially accessibility that does not have a friendly custodian on the other end, because that's the hardest part. When you don't have the person who the phone belongs to helping you get the data, it's really hard sometimes to get that. And the other part is from the review standpoint, the more e-discovery side of the coin, software companies are stepping up to the plate, thinking about, hey, when you get a report, like a forensic report from a device, and you get data from a device forensically, how can we ingest it into your review tool so that it's meaningful to you to consider with the rest of whatever it is that you're reviewing for this matter? So those are two things I see in terms of the future. I hope that this was a helpful episode, you guys. I feel like it's more scary than we offered solutions, but...
No, I think that's so interesting. And I love your point about like software needs to catch up to where we are in the world. Because I think we're also sometimes there's this really big overarching question of who owns this data. If you've got a BYOD policy in place, it might specify who owns it. But if you don't, who owns your work-related data on your phone? Do you own it? Does your company own it? Whose job is it to produce that? And if the company owns the data and they can't get to it physically, like we're still, I mean, then you're running up against sanctions, right? For not collecting data that physically you couldn't collect, but you were legally obligated to. Mm-hmm. And that's a really weird world that we're living in too.
Well, and I mean, maybe we should play the song Blurred Lines after this. Like, I don't know.
No, but... very problematic. Very, very.
I'm just kidding. But speaking about blurred lines, this is an area that it's hard to define because a lot of things that happen in an investigation happen off the clock. You know, if you think about it, if somebody's stealing people or stealing things or doing naughty things with each other or themselves, whatever, that's maybe a story for another day.
Do you, boo.
But it's probably going to be off the clock and it's probably going to be on your own device. And so then it gets real personal real fast. And understanding where those lines begin and end in terms of a company, I think is super important. So the more case law we can have, the better to help us define those lines.
Love that. Well, folks, I think that brings us to the end of our show. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your pods and give us a 5-star review. Please tell your friends, family, and coworkers about us, but only the cool ones. And as always, please hit us up on LinkedIn or at our website, which is ediscoverychicks.com, with your thoughts, questions, and drink recommendations. Until next time.
Bye.
Bye. Mm-hmm.